Baker McKenzie welcomes you to TMT Talk, the global TMT podcast series, focusing on sector-specific issues that are impactful on players in the technology, media, and telecoms industry.
Hi, everyone. My name is Carolina Pardo. I am a partner in the Bogota office of Baker McKenzie, and I'm delighted to have all of you here today and to have with us Lothar Detterman and Michaela Neville, who are partners at Baker McKenzie and experts in data protection matters. Michaela Neville is a partner in our Frankfurt office, and Lothar Detterman is a partner in our Palo Alto and San Francisco offices. Today, we are going to talk about privacy predictions and what to prepare for. And as a brief introduction, I would say that data continues to be at the center of innovation, digitalization, and new business models. And within this data, personal data has a prominent importance. So from a legal perspective, we cannot escape from the convergence between data protection regulation and the regulation of other aspects or disciplines of all these business models. With such a fast-moving target, we can only wonder what the new trends will continue to be and what we can expect. So thank you, Lothar and Michaela, for joining us today. And with that, I will start by asking Michaela on something that I believe that many of us keep wondering about, and that has to do with the banners for consent on the use of cookies. So Michaela, from a regulatory perspective and from your experience, how important are those banners?
Yeah, thank you, Carolina. Since the EU and the UK data protection authorities continue their attention to cookies and also similar web-based tracking technologies, these are important. Cookie compliance and enforcement seems to be one of the priorities of some data protection authorities. They have recently imposed remarkably fines for alleged cookie violations under the e-privacy directive or made decisions in this regard. Also, the European Data Protection Board established a cookie enforcement task force at EU level. Some of the German data protection authorities have already carried out proactive website audits, including cookie compliance, or have become active due to complaints concerning the use of cookies. And thus, we expect enforcement in the area of cookies to be a hot topic also in this year. Lothar, can you give your views from an US law perspective?
Absolutely, Michaela. I can give it from the perspective of somebody who lives in the US and just visited Europe. My fingers have become a lot stronger from clicking in so many banners. And it is also seen now sometimes in websites here in the United States, not very common, and it's not required. And I personally do not recommend that clients seek affirmative opt-in consent for the placement of cookies. It's sufficient to have detailed and accurate disclosures. And it's actually counterproductive to seek consent because there are regimes where, under certain circumstances, companies have to allow an opt-out, and under California law are then prohibited from prompting consumers for 12 months to seek an opt-in consent that would override the opt-out. So the cookie banners can actually do harm. What we have in California is a do not sell opt-out regime, where companies have to put links on their website with prescribed words that allow consumers to restrict the selling of personal information. And this will also include sharing, defined as disclosures for cross-contextual behavioral advertisement. And that is something companies really have to focus on. And the California Attorney General has stated that a global privacy signal setting in a browser must be respected and viewed as a do not sell. So I recommend that companies focus on that and do not try to emulate the browser banners for Europe that are counterproductive in the US. And I think also in the rest of the world, the banners are not required and I think not even particularly helpful. What would you say, Carolina, for Colombian law? Are these banners required there?
Thank you, Latar. I was going to say that this conversation hopefully is very useful because we see different trends in different regions. And in Colombia, the situation is that we do require consent, express and informed consent for the processing of virtually every type of data, not even personal sensitive data. So the banners and the opt-ins, not even the opt-outs, are the rule in Colombia. And that can get a little annoying. I'm not talking about the website administrators. I can talk about the users that I frequently see like a little bit annoyed having to opt in and decide on so many things before they get to the product that they want to use, as you were explaining on your fingers, Latar. So probably your exercise could be a little bit more intense if you were to visit Colombia soon. So that is part of the differences in approaches that we see around the globe. Thank you, Micaela and Latar, for that. But we also see, Latar, that in the U.S., the privacy legislation is moving fast, and we're seeing some updates in certain states. So I'm going to perhaps ask you if you can refer to that so our audience can understand what is going on recently in the U.S.
Yeah, the United States has, in every state historically, a number of different privacy laws. And if you add them all up, it will go into the thousands, state and federal. And there's a long time tradition. Many of these laws are have been in place since the early 70s, and companies know what to do. The requirements were not overly prescriptive, and it was somewhat manageable. But since 2018, California came forward with a more comprehensive set of personal data processing regulations, more EU-style inspired. Other states are following this example. And so in addition to all these very specific laws, which cover children's privacy, online privacy, supermarket club cards, loyalty cards, phone interception, all in different laws, we now, on top of it, get these broad consumer privacy laws, and that puts companies in the U.S. in the worst possible position because they have to comply with all these very specific things, and then additionally, broad regulation, but limited to states, so they're different from state to state. We hope this is a transient stage and that at some point there'll be federal legislation that will harmonize this, but it's not in sight. So for the next few years, I think companies will have to deal with state-by-state differences. I mentioned California earlier. It is and remains the leader in this development. And after this California Consumer Privacy Act was introduced in 2018, a ballot initiative passed that expanded and further solidified this law and made it even more GDPR-like. But it has also a lot of differences, and the California Attorney General has started enforcing it by writing letters to companies, mostly companies who are established in California. But we also have seen some cases where relatively unknown companies that are not headquartered have very limited nexus to California have received a letter asking them to explain their position on compliance with this California law, and also in some cases a notice of violation with a 30-day cure period. Virginia and Colorado are following in 2023 when their laws take effect. They're more narrowly focused really on consumers, but they have slightly different requirements. And Utah has passed a law that is even more principle-based and open and will allow companies who comply with California will probably be able to comply also with Virginia, Colorado, and Utah, but have to make some decisions on whether they want to extend the coverage of the relatively strict rules for California also for those other states. And we expect that enforcement will be very active, so companies are well advised to inform themselves about the new rules, post new disclosures on their website, put different data processing agreements in place with companies in order to protect the personal information of consumers in these different U.S. states.
Thank you, Lothar. And that is very interesting. And one thing that you mentioned was the influence somehow, as I understood it, of the EU in some of these trends, particularly as you mentioned in California. I understand that this is not totally a total influence. I'm not saying California has completely copied that, but there is a big influence. And I think that the same happens, or we saw that happened in Latin America about 10 years ago. With the exception of Brazil, most countries in Latin America are still basing the processing of data on consent. They haven't adopted a different approach. And as I just mentioned, express and informed consent, for instance, in countries like Colombia, is required for processing any type of data, which is something that is manageable if you plan ahead, but can be a little bit challenging and annoying for consumers. Having seen that the EU is such an influencer in this topic, Micaela, perhaps you can talk to us and tell us a little bit about the core focus of the EU these days on these matters.
Well, one of the core focus from an EU law perspective is the cross-border data transfer restrictions. They remain to be a challenge mainly for two reasons. First, companies must complete the implementation of the revised EU standard contractual clauses for data transfers to third countries by the end of this year. And that means that there is not much time left to update existing agreements with vendors, customers, and intragroup agreements to the new standard contractual clauses. And this can be particularly challenging if the processing chain includes more than two tiers. And second, companies must comply with the requirements of the Schrems II decision by carrying out so-called transfer impact assessments and, if applicable, take supplementary measures. These transfer impact assessments impose significant challenges since they require increased checking obligations concerning the laws applicable to the recipient in the third country, and also increased documentation efforts. And even if they are carried out, there's still legal uncertainty. We expect an increase of enforcement in the aftermath of Schrems II, on the one hand due to complaints of individuals, and on the other hand, due to proactive enforcement by data protection authorities. So, for example, in Germany, data protection authorities have already started to actively enforce Schrems II by reaching out to selected companies via quite detailed questionnaires on certain topics such as applicant portals and intragroup data transfers. So companies are hoping for a political solution the announcement end of March by the European Commission and the United States that they have reached an agreement in principle for a transatlantic data privacy framework gives hope for transfers to the US. And according to the statement, the new key principles include, for example, a new set of rules and binding safeguards to limit access to data by US authorities to what is necessary and proportionate. The agreement in principle will now be translated into legal documents. The European Data Protection Board published a statement saying that it welcomes the announcement of a political agreement on a new transatlantic data privacy framework and that it will prepare its opinion once it receives the respective documents from the Commission. However, the European Data Protection Board also emphasized that at this stage, this announcement does not constitute a legal framework, but that data exporters must continue taking the actions required by the Schrems II decision. And thus, until a new adequacy decision by the Commission is put in place, companies have to deal with the significant challenges stemming from the Schrems II decision. And apart from that, a new transatlantic data privacy framework would only concern transfers to the US and not to other third countries. So, Lothar, is that the same in the US and elsewhere? Was US law and other laws also influenced by these topics out of the European Union?
Not yet. So the United States still does not have cross-border transfer restrictions. The state laws that I mentioned earlier, who are influenced by look to European legislation, don't cover transfers outside the United States. That would be a federal matter, and the states don't get involved with that. And on the federal level, the U.S. stands for freedom, and on a political level has not sought to limit the transfers of data. I always waited for that as being part of what you correctly state is a political dispute, a trade dispute really at its core between Europe and the United States, where the surveillance activities on the US are criticized and politicized in Europe. And that is something in the US would have to happen on a federal level. But I've never heard that the US would retaliate and tit for tat, say, okay, then we'll restrict transfers from the US to Europe, not even as a proposal, interestingly. On the political level, I wonder whether there is rethinking in Europe, also based on the security situation where Europe very much relies again on US intelligence military to protect its borders and its neighbors from aggression coming from the east. And I wonder if the Zeitenwende that the German government has announced in terms of viewing the security situation will also inform the political stance that they would take in terms of transferring data flow to the United States. It is odd and not really explainable why Europe is focused so much on transfers from the EU to the US and the surveillance activities of the US, when it's very clear that all other countries, including many European countries, have less privacy protections for personal data against state intelligence services than the United States has. But coming back to what is practically important for companies, U.S. companies can transfer data internationally. They continue to do that. They promote cloud computing, dynamic use of resources around the world. And what we're doing is for clients, we're analyzing why their particular activities are not subject to these surveillance concerns that have been raised in the court cases that you mentioned, Michaela. And for probably 19 out of 20, we conclude it's absolutely not relevant. For a few clients here or there, there is some impact, and that requires then additional measures. We document encryption, end-to-end encryption in some cases, that is then intended to comfort the European customers and business partners about the particular situation there. The effort of documenting this is enormous, as you point out, because the supply chains in cloud computing and information technology are very long, and therefore we have a lot to do in terms of documenting these efforts to satisfy the European requirements, which are, as Michaela notes, imposed on companies in Germany, and they have to then pass it on to their suppliers in the US and other countries, and this has to be passed through the entire supply chain. The focus on security, on protection against government access, is of strategic interest also to US companies, of course, and so I don't think it's entirely wasted effort driven by political motivations, but the level of effort and focus on this is probably a little bit disproportionate if you look at all the other threats and all the other work that has to be done in the privacy area. And since you asked me what is the focus in the US, it's not that. This is just homework that we're getting from Europe. But we have many other things to work through. I mentioned earlier the compliance with these new state laws. I would say that it derives the most attention, it receives the most attention right now amongst US companies. But there's a whole bunch of other things that US companies were always supposed to do that continue to be of a focus for the Federal Trade Commission, which enforces also privacy law to protect consumers, in some cases could also protect employees. And then on the state level, the attorneys general, and we have now a privacy protection agency that was also installed by way of this popular ballot measure that passed at the 2020 election. And the areas that regulators are focused on are not completely different from what you see in Europe besides these transfers. Children's information, biometric information, health, security breaches, aftermath of ransomware, all of those things have to be addressed. And when we work with clients, we try for each one to make kind of a top 10 list to list the things that are most important to them that present the highest compliance risk based on regulatory focus, based on company perceived risk, based on their customer demands, the employees and consumer expectations. And in this top 10 list are often similar topics as you would see in Europe and other parts of the world. And as Carolina mentioned, we work closely together. We exchange information on the developments in the different countries in order to help our multinationals not only to prioritize these top 10 topics for a particular jurisdiction, but then also globally, which areas, which jurisdiction to focus on, which is different for every client a little bit. So I would say the trend, the biggest trend, is it's getting more complicated. The laws are getting way more prescriptive, and they are forcing multinationals to develop country by country prioritization and also different documentation, supplemental privacy notices for every jurisdiction, data transfer and processing agreements around the world that address the different systems, but security measures at the back end that protect data globally with measures that satisfy the highest requirements anywhere in the world in order to stay safe, secure, which is the best foundation for protection of privacy.
Lothar, thank you so much. And thank you, Michaela. I think this is incredibly interesting. And I believe that we could stay here for much longer discussing all these trends. But I'm mindful that we have a short time here. But thank you so much. This is incredibly interesting. And as you were saying, Lothar, I think it's a challenge for multinational companies. But we keep trying in helping them in trying to have a consistent and yet, in as much as possible, a single approach to these matters. But it's always useful and necessary to understand where all the differences in legislations are, as the countries are also at different stages, as we see here in LATAM. So with that, I want to thank you both for such an interesting conversation. And I want to thank all of our audience who joined us today. I want to invite you also to stay tuned for our next TMT podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you. So thank you, everyone, and have a great day.